Chapter 9. Steve was on edge all day. His mind kept replaying everything about the day before, turning it over and over again, alternately finding support for Bucky's theory, and then just as quickly finding something that made the whole thing fall apart. As 7 o'clock approached, he was practically vibrating with adrenaline. He saw Happy pull the car up from his view from the fire escape and quickly checked his appearance one last time, and took a deep, steadying breath before heading downstairs. He had to remind himself not to run to the car. "Hi, Happy," he called in greeting. The other man just shrugged and opened the passenger side back door to the Maserati. As he walked toward the car, he heard the building's front door open behind him and turned to see Bucky and a dark-haired, doe-eyed woman clambering down the stairs, Bucky's arm around the woman's waist. The young woman stopped short when she saw Steve.
Whoa,
you have got to be Steve, she said, sticking out her hand. Darcy, she announced, by way of introduction.
Yes, Steve, that's me, he replied.
He nearly jumped back when the woman squealed, "Ooh, can we keep him? He's so cute." Shaking his head and turning to Bucky, he caught him rolling his eyes over Darcy's head.
Well, it was nice to meet you, ma'am.
Steve replied, but I have to go. Your last, Dorito, the woman said, untangling herself from Bucky and pulling out a cell phone. Steve looked at Bucky in confusion. Bucky just shrugged. Yoga instructor, he said, as if that was some sort of explanation.
Well, I guess have a good time, Steve said with a fond, familiar smile.
Yeah, I don't think there's much doubt of that, bro. You stay out of trouble, okay? Don't do anything I wouldn't do, Bucky said, clapping Steve on the back and heading towards Darcy.
That's a pretty short list, Buck,
Steve teased. Bucky just smiled and waved him off, looping an arm around Darcy and saying something in her ear that made her throaty laughter echo down the block. Steve just shook his head ruefully and climbed into the car, letting himself sink back into the seat, leg tapping a staccato rhythm against the floorboard. Absently, he heard Happy hop into the driver's seat and start the engine, and soon they were headed on the now familiar route to Tony's. After a few minutes, Happy awkwardly cleared his throat.
So, you and that Bucky guy, you seem close, he said, jolting Steve from his reverie.
Yeah, Bucky and I go way back. We've known each other forever, it seems, Steve replied absently, still running through numerous scenarios to try with Tony, discarding most of them as the heights of stupidity. He was pretty much down to writing a note that said, "Do you love me? Check yes or no," when Happy made another noncommittal noise in his throat.
It's just the boss, you know. Lots of folks, well, they just want what they can get out of him. He's usually pretty good at spotting them, though, the takers. But sometimes, particularly lately, after what happened, he just needs someone to look out for him is all, Happy said, seemingly apropos of nothing that Steve could figure.
I think that's great, Happy.
That he has you, I mean, Steve responded, wondering what the man was about.
He'd gone from not speaking to him and looking at him like he was worse than a fingerprint on one of his newly minted wax jobs to suddenly sharing observations on Tony's vulnerable side. That made the man go beet red, but Steve hardly noticed because they were pulling into Tony's drive, the security gate opening automatically for them.
Someone could maybe get the wrong impression about you and your friend, I mean, Happy said, his voice thick.
Yeah, I guess.
Wait.
What? Steve said sharply. Then suddenly he was remembering that night a week ago, Bucky chasing him down the stairs, grabbing him as he was leaving.
You know I love you, Steve. Don't go to him tonight.
I need you. I always have.
Then Bucky rushing off, all the emotion of that confrontation still fresh in Steve's mind. But now he saw Bucky stalking off, nearly running over Happy as he got out of the car to open the door for Steve. Happy, who had heard that part of the conversation, who was worried about someone taking advantage of Tony, who had parked the car in the garage after Steve got out, the garage next to Tony's workshop. Well, crap. You thought me and Bucky, you told Tony? Steve sputtered, trying to wrap his head around everything whirling around in his head. Happy had the good grace to look abashed. Just didn't want to see him hurt, you know? He's been through so much. And people, they don't see him, not really. They see this larger-than-life persona, Tony Stark, see? Not really him, Happy explained. Maybe I was a bit hasty. I mean, I've seen it before, you know? Not like with you, I mean, just with people and him. Out for a quick buck, just looking for what they can get from him. But you, he was so... Well, I worried, okay? Thought maybe it was better to nip this thing in the bud if you were... Well, if you were not what he thought. So you told him I was seeing Bucky? Steve asked, trying to sound calm. Well, I told him what I saw, which, you know, looked pretty, familiar there, and that he ought to talk to you about it. I didn't... You have to believe me here. I didn't think it would be this bad. I mean, it never has before. He never... Not like this. If I'd known, I would have kept my big mouth shut. I wouldn't... Not on purpose. Look, Steve, I'm just sorry, okay? I messed up. But I just couldn't watch him get hurt. But I think maybe he would have been happier not knowing, even if it was true, Happy told him, clearly embarrassed and appalled by how things had turned out. Steve wanted to yell at the man, put some of the pain and guilt he'd been feeling the past week onto Happy's shoulders, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. Happy clearly cared about Tony, and he'd been trying to protect him. Looking back, Steve could see how the whole thing might have looked from Happy's point of view. Would he have done any differently if he'd thought Tony was at risk of being used? The car pulled to a stop in front of the house. For a long moment, neither he nor Happy moved. I'm going to fix this, Happy, Steve said firmly. He heard Happy let out a slow breath of relief. By the time they arrived at Tony's house, Steve's whole body was thrumming with tension. He wasn't sure if he wanted to strangle Tony or kiss him, or maybe a bit of both. Why hadn't Tony just asked him about Bucky? Because the man thought he knew too much for his own good? Steve felt himself rushing out of the car with a quick nod to Happy's softly muttered, good luck, and into the house, taking the steps down to Tony's workshop two at a time. He typed the code into the panel on the door, a bit surprised to find it still worked, as the door slid open to admit him, and stalked into the room ready for a confrontation. It's always a bit of a letdown when you're boiling with pent-up frustration and the object of your ire manages to be absent while you stew, Steve thought. Long minutes later, when no Tony materialized in the workshop, his agitated pacing took him on yet another circuit of the room. He was about to ask Jarvis for help when he happened to notice something on Tony's workstation as he walked past it for the third time. Tucked under one of his Stark tablets, Steve's eye caught on a corner of paper. He recognized the color and consistency of it, as well as the soft pencil lines. Taking it by the corner, he pulled it out from under the tablet and realized it was his sketch of wet Tony, the crinkling on the paper indicating it had been crumpled up and then flattened out again, now apparently placed under the tablet to try to flatten it out even more. There was something about what that action spoke to that took the air out of Steve's anger. He carefully replaced it under the tablet. You're here, Tony's voice sounded flatly from behind him with no trace of inflection, as if it was merely an observation about the weather or any other mundane topic. Steve turned to look at Tony and felt his heart break a little, recalling Bucky's words about the awful night he predicted for Tony. That had apparently been something of an understatement, if the dark circles and bloodshot eyes were any indication. Tony ran a hand through his messy hair and brushed past Steve to his workspace, shifting things around on the table, seemingly at random for a few moments, before giving up and leaning knuckled fists on the table for support. "I think we need to talk, Tony," Steve said, trying to keep his voice even as he watched the muscles of Tony's back tense and shift as he dug his knuckles into the table. "We really don't," Tony said without looking up. "Look, we never said anything about this being an exclusive thing. I get it, okay? This," he waved his hand at the space between them, "is just a job. It's not like we're going steady, so don't sweat it." He was back to moving things about on the work table, but with jerky, forceful movements instead of his usual careful grace. "I overreacted. My problem, not yours. We'll just pretend it never happened. Go back to what we had before." "I don't think we can do that, Tony," Steve said firmly. "Why the hell not?" Tony shouted, tossing the wrench he'd been fidgeting with hard against the metal work table, the loud bang echoing in the room. "Because you've already taken some piece of information, jumped 10 steps ahead, and made a decision about it, and managed to do all of that without even so much as asking me what was going on," Steve shouted back. Because really, he was just tired of this. He scrubbed his face with his hand, trying to get his raging emotions back under some kind of control. "Why didn't you just ask me?" Tony was silent, back hunched over the work table, but still now. Steve wished he could see his face, but Tony was still refusing to look at him. I didn't think I could take hearing you lie, but I didn't think I could take it if you didn't," Tony said quietly. For some reason, after he said it, he seemed smaller to Steve, as if he was slowly curving in on himself, as whatever momentum had been propelling him dissipated. Steve sighed heavily. "Tony, would you look at me, please?" he pleaded. Tony slowly turned around, raising dark eyes to briefly meet Steve's before looking at some fascinating point directly behind Steve's left shoulder. "Tony, I'm not sleeping with Bucky. Bucky, he's my best friend. I've known him my whole life. He's like a brother to me. He was concerned that I was getting too involved here and you were not. I'm definitely not with him or anything remotely like that or anyone. I mean, there's just you. And well, I guess I'd like it to be that way," Steve finished lamely. Sometime during his stuttering speech, Tony's eyes had drifted back to his face. Steve wasn't sure what he could read there. Relief, sure, but something else was shifting through Tony's gaze, something deeper and less defined. He walked slowly over to stand in front of Steve, and for a moment, Steve thought Tony would kiss him, which seemed like a fine idea to Steve. But instead, he just lowered his head and rested his forehead against the middle of Steve's chest, letting out a long, low breath, hands coming up to grip Steve's arms almost too tightly. They stayed like that for a long moment. "I would like that too," Tony said to the floor, relief evident in his tone. But the statement had the ring of a declaration to Steve, so that was enough. "Just next time you have concerns, can you just maybe ask me before losing it completely?" Steve said with a slight quirk to his mouth. "Don't get cocky," Tony replied, but the smile was real this time. Beer and pizza and an episode of The Daily Show later, Steve wrapped his arms around Tony as they lay curled in bed, the muted TV still flickering in the background. Tony was tracing circles on his t-shirt clad stomach, each one getting ever so slightly wider, and it was driving Steve insane. "So," Tony cleared his throat, and Steve would have said nervously, but since when did Tony Stark do nervous? "There's this dinner Friday night, after the board meeting, about the conversion to clean energy, which, well, let's just say we'll all probably need drinks after that. They aren't exactly sold on the idea of moving the company away from weapons. Anyway, all SI folks Well, and Rhodey, but he's family. Pepper, she's great. Obi, a few others, Tony continued. Steve assumed this was Tony's way of telling him to skedaddle Friday night. I thought you might like to go, Tony said quietly, not looking up, but the circles had slowed. You want me to go? Steve frowned. Won't they wonder? He really didn't know what he was asking. Won't they wonder if I'm a hooker seemed offensive to both him and Tony, so he just left it. They'll probably like you better than me. Pepper will talk your ear off about the newest Mondrian or whatever she's bought. They're friends. I'd just like them to meet you, Tony replied. Steve swallowed, unsure how to respond. I don't have anything to wear, he said, because it had the benefit of being the first thing that came to his mind and also true. That is something we can definitely fix, Tony said with a grin. I wanted to see you in a real suit since the first night we met. Steve hummed, because the circles were dipping lower and lower with each pass, until he felt Tony's finger hook lightly under his shirt, just above the waist of his pants, and hike it up enough to splay his palm over Steve's stomach. I seem to remember it a bit differently, Steve teased, and was rewarded with a huff of warm breath against his navel. And Jesus, that went right to his cock. Tony was placing light kisses down the trail of hair below, causing Steve to suck in a gasp of air he didn't know he was missing. Then Tony was undoing the top button on his pants and lowering the zipper, Steve lifting his hips a bit to help as Tony slid the pants off entirely. A few more tugs and his boxers followed, freeing his cock to spring up and tap against Tony's chin as he leaned down, scraping his beard over the length. Steve let out a gurgled, half-formed sound as Tony licked a stripe from the base to the slit at the tip. I want to see you. Please, Steve rushed out, hands reaching for the edges of Tony's clothes. Okay, yeah, Tony said, making quick work of his pants and briefs, watching as Steve tossed his shirt aside before climbing back up to capture Steve's mouth in a sloppy kiss, before looking down and moving his hips just so, watching as the tips of their cocks met for a moment before Tony shifted down to grind against Steve, pressing their cocks together between them, the friction and pressure just enough to border the line between pleasure and pain. Steve felt his hips buck up to meet Tony and spread his thighs to accommodate him. He was running his hands over Tony's arms and chest through Tony's shirt, wishing for the feel of Tony's skin against his. Not if you don't want to, but I'd like... Steve stumbled over his words, but managed to communicate himself well enough, running his hands up and down Tony's chest. He felt Tony's whole body still under his. It's okay. You don't have to, really. No, it's fine. Tony looked away, his hand coming to rest on the center of his chest, seemingly of its own volition. I haven't since Afghanistan. Tony, it won't bother me, whatever it is. I swear. Steve promised, putting as much certainty as he could muster into his words. He meant it. Whatever it was clearly made Tony uncomfortable, and Steve hated that. Tony brought his eyes back to Steve's and didn't break the gaze as he carefully removed the wife-beater t-shirt he'd been wearing. Underneath, even in the poor light offered by the muted TV, Steve could see fairly substantial scarring. He sucked in a breath, reaching out. Tony, he whispered achingly. What happened? Tony caught his hand before he could touch. It's fine, really. I was injured during the attack on the convoy. One of the other prisoners, a man named Jensen, saved me with, very unconventional surgery. I improved it. Then I was rescued. Steve was confused until Tony brought his hand to rest squarely on the center of Tony's chest. It felt odd. And Steve realized that the flesh wasn't really flesh. It was a prosthesis, like you would see covering a fake hand or a new leg for a soldier, just perfectly round and sitting in the center of Tony's chest. He heard Tony take a deep breath and then watched as he brought up his other hand to remove the covering. Underneath, a strange blue light emanated, filling the space between them, and Steve could see something working inside. "It sort of keeps me alive," Tony said, and Steve's eyes snapped to his. "What?" Steve shouted, sitting up. It's fine. It's fine, really. Think of it as a very fancy battery," Tony explained. Can I touch it?" Steve asked curiously. He felt Tony's breath hitch a bit at that. "If you want." Steve gently placed a hand over the glowing disc, felt the warmth it gave off, the faint feeling of power of some kind running through it. This is the arc reactor, isn't it?" Steve marveled. "Like what you want to build for the clean energy project."
Yeah,
this is where the idea came from," Tony replied.
"You built this?" Steve asked. "In a cave in Afghanistan? While a captive?"
"Tony, that's amazing." Tony waved his hand as if to say it was nothing. But Steve could tell much of the tension had leaked from Tony's shoulders. He saw Tony reach for the covering and found himself, without thinking much about it, saying, "Don't." Tony stopped, eyes snapping to Steve's.
"Don't. I like it. It's you," Steve said. "It's bold and beautiful and impossible. It's you, Tony. You shouldn't hide it. The world should know what you did."
Tony was just staring at him, eyes burning with some kind of intense scrutiny, as if he wasn't sure where the punchline would come.
"I like it," Steve repeated.
Then Tony's mouth was back on his, kissing him so deeply Steve thought he'd drown from the feel of it. Felt himself groan, open his mouth wider, and tilt his head to the side to give Tony's tongue better access. He heard Tony reach over and grab the tube from the bedside table, and his cock, which had been dutifully patient while he'd been admiring the arc reactor, quickly grabbed his full attention. He felt Tony's hand, slick and warm, rub down between their bodies to wrap around his cock, stroking up and down. Then, with a deep moan, Tony brought his own cock alongside Steve's and wrapped his hand around both of them as best he could, continuing to rub up and down, grinding his hips this way and that, letting them slide against each other in a perfect rhythm. When Tony's mouth moved down to suckle at Steve's earlobe, he took the opportunity to run his hands over Tony's chest, fingers lightly scraping across taut nipples, then tracing the circumference of the arc reactor, eliciting some kind of half-choked noise from Tony, who had moved his mouth down to lick at the place where Steve's neck met his collarbone, but gave a sharp bite as Steve's fingers circled the reactor.
"Jesus fucking Christ," Tony said, his hand losing its groove and coming to wrap again around Steve's cock, pumping harder now as Tony ground down against him.
Steve watched in awe as Tony's hand left his cock just long enough to pinch the head of Tony's own cock, while Tony grimaced and took a deep breath before returning to stroke Steve's length again. And just the knowledge that Tony was so ready, just from that, was enough to send Steve over the edge, body spasming as he came into Tony's hand with a strangled cry. Tony was still breathing heavily, his erection bouncing off his belly as Steve's body finally settled. He heard Tony squirt more lube onto his hand and then felt a slick finger dip down to probe his entrance, pressing in all the way in one swift motion. He growled lowly, felt his body stretching down, seeking something.
"God, just fuck, Steve. Don't. I can't," Tony stuttered incoherently.
Steve ignored him and ground his hips down on Tony's finger, pressing it as deep as he could. But it wasn't enough. Wasn't nearly enough. He needed more. He was pretty sure he might have shouted that by Tony's quick reaction time, as he felt a second finger press in, filling him and moving around, trying to stretch the ring of muscles. He moved his hips up and down once, twice, and then again, spreading his legs wider as Tony pumped and swirled his fingers.
Please, Tony, please, he heard himself begging in strangled, half-choked, keening sounds.
Fuck. Fuck, Steve, don't. Let me get you.
Tony ground out, working his fingers harder now. Steve told him what he thought of that by reaching for Tony's cock as it bobbed against Tony's belly and thumbing the pre-cum on the slit over the head. Tony yowled. And that was apparently enough, because the next thing Steve knew, Tony was slamming into him, burying himself fully. And it did hurt at first, for a moment, as his body struggled to accommodate the invasion. But then the burn, stretch, pain gave way to raw sensation as Tony began to move. Slow at first, then picking up speed as he thrust between Steve's legs. Steve had a moment to think how beautiful Tony was, features sharp against the blue light, eyes on fire, before Tony shifted slightly, lifting Steve's leg up, adjusting the angle, and holy fuck was Steve's last semi-coherent thought as his back bowed and he saw white spots dancing in front of his eyes. Tony was repeating his name over and over, seemingly beyond anything more complicated than that, a chorus of Steve's filling the room. Tony's strokes got sloppier, losing the pace as his body thrummed and cracked as he spilled himself inside Steve. A few last shuddering thrusts, and Tony collapsed on top of him, slick with sweat and mess, hair sticking every which way, and a dazed but deeply satisfied look on his face. Steve stroked Tony's hair out of his face, letting their breathing calm and blood start flowing back to other areas of the body. Steve felt Tony pull out and heard him rummage around the bedside for a towel to clean up as best they could. Steve grimaced at the thought of Tony's poor cleaning people. So, Tony started, settling down against Steve's longer frame, fingers tapping a rhythm against the arc reactor. Steve wondered if he knew that he was doing that.
You said you wanted that. Earlier down in the workshop, I mean. You said you wanted just us, exclusive.
Steve tried to bring his brain back online enough to respond.
Yeah.
Because he did. Until that moment, maybe he hadn't quite realized how much. There had been so much energy expended on what had gone wrong. He hadn't let himself think too much about what could possibly go right. And Steve knew this was one of those moments. He could tell Tony about his mom, tell him that he didn't want some contract with a condo and car lease. He just wanted Tony and about 10 grand a month. Therein lay his problem. He still needed the money. He had no doubt that Tony would give it to him. If he just asked, even without saying why, Tony would give it to him. He wanted to tell Tony, though. Maybe it was selfish, but he wanted to talk to Tony about it, how scared he was, how he nodded at what the doctor said but didn't really take it in because he just wanted to shove the reports at them and tell them it was their problem to deal with. They were doctors, after all. How he was maybe a little mad at his mom for cutting across the street instead of waiting for the crosswalk, though he knew that wasn't fair, and he'd done it tons of times in New York himself, and that he felt horribly guilty sometimes for the moments after the accident when he thought, as the doctors explained about traumatic brain injury, that it would have been easier if she'd died. He needed someone to talk to about these things, and more than anything, he wanted it to be Tony. But he also knew deep down in his bones that telling Tony about his mom's situation was going to hurt Tony deeply. He wasn't sure how to explain it in a way that didn't make Tony feel like he'd somehow taken advantage. He needed time to think about the best way to tell him. And with the clean energy presentation before the SI board coming up, Tony definitely did not need the distraction. After, Steve thought, after the dinner, I'll tell him. Let him get through the presentation, and then we'll sit down and have a real talk about everything. About how he felt, which he'd given up pretending wasn't what it was, and what he wanted out of this. That was just a few days away, and it would give him time to think through the least offensive way to talk to Tony about it. The last thing he wanted was Tony feeling guilty about anything. He had nothing to feel guilty about. This whole thing had been Steve's idea. He'd gone into it willingly, at least where Tony was concerned. He hugged Tony tighter to him and felt himself drifting off to sleep, the blue glow of Tony's arc reactor the only thing between them. The next morning, Steve managed to wake up at his usual time, grimacing as he forced his body to move and untangled himself from Tony. As he did, he felt Tony's hand reach out to still him. "I have to go," Steve said, trying to keep the regret out of his voice. "Work, you know? That thing people do? I have to go, Tony," he said, as Tony's grip tightened. "You really don't," Tony said with sleepy petulance. Steve sighed. Staying in bed, wrapped up with Tony all day, sounded far more appealing than heading to the construction site. He briefly considered calling in sick. He never did that. He could take one day. But then his guilty conscience kicked in, and he shifted out from under Tony's hand to climb out of bed. "I'll probably be back before you have your second cup of coffee," Steve said with a reassuring smile. "I'm sure," Tony said, shoving his head under the pillow. Steve did not, absolutely did not, pause to think how adorable that was. Steve showered and dressed quickly, surprised to find Tony up and about, wrapped in a deep red silk robe and sitting at the kitchen bar tapping away at a tablet. A quick glance told Steve it was his clean energy presentation for the board. Tony handed Steve a warm mug of coffee and pointed to a basket of muffins that had magically appeared, as most food seemed to do around Tony. Steve was halfway through a bit of muffin when he heard the front door open and close and turned to greet Happy, only to find himself face to face with a tall redhead in 3-inch heels and a designer's suit carrying a stack of papers. "Tony, you have got to sign these or the board is going to lose its collective mind." "Oh, I'm interrupting," the woman said, coming to an abrupt halt as she took in the scene. Steve supposed they looked ridiculously domestic. "What makes you say that?" Tony asked dryly, not looking up. I'll just come back later," the woman said.
I'm sorry, I was just leaving. Don't go on my account. I mean, I'm leaving.
For work," Steve managed, looking around at Tony hopefully. God, he was terrible at this. Tony was smirking into his coffee, but he saw him flash a quick look at the woman that Steve couldn't read.
"Pep, this is Steve," Tony said without further explanation, except that was apparently explanation enough.
Oh.
"Well, Steve, it's so nice to finally meet you," she said, and it felt genuine. "I'm Pepper Potts, SICEO. Tony has been ignoring my attempts to get these papers signed all week, so I thought I'd come by and withhold caffeine until he caved, but I see he beat me to it this morning." There was a small, fond smile playing about her lips.
"It really is so nice to meet you, Steve. I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk Friday night at the dinner. I don't mean to keep you, though," Pepper added politely.
"Oh, no, it's fine, ma'am. I'm sure the construction site can make do without me for a bit," Steve smiled.
"Construction site?" Pepper repeated, her gaze going sharp.
Yes, I help with the painting," Steve said, turning to Tony to see if he'd said something wrong.
"That's fascinating, Steve," Pepper said, eyes narrowing.
"I guess," Steve agreed, though he really didn't see how.
"It's just that SI recently diversified its portfolio, including some investments in construction," Pepper said carefully, enunciating every word. But she was looking at Tony now, not Steve, so he assumed this was some business thing between them.
"In fact, SI has made several interesting acquisitions recently," she nodded.
"Do you, by any chance, have an apartment?"
Yes. I share it with a couple of the guys from the crew," he replied, wondering at the non sequitur. "Fascinating," she said loudly. "Isn't that fascinating, Tony?"
She continued with false sincerity. Steve looked between them, saw Tony shake his head, and reach a hand out for the paperwork.
"So, I need to look this over, huh?"
Tony asked, staring at the pile.
"In detail," Pepper replied, her smile a bit too gleeful for paperwork, Steve thought. "I'll expect comments."
"Pep," Tony started,
"about the actual documents, Tony. Not just random comments about how much you like paprika this time," she warned.
"Well, in my defense, I really do like paprika," Tony grinned.
At Pepper's raised eyebrow, Tony relented. "Fine, fine, I'll take a look. Leave it be, okay?"
"Steve," she said, turning to him, "it was truly a pleasure to meet you. I look forward to seeing you again soon."
One more warning glance to Tony, and she was out the door.
"Not gonna lie, she kind of scares me," Steve said, staring at the closed doors.
"A perfectly defensible position," Tony agreed, putting his tablet down and starting to page through the stack of paperwork.
"Okay, well, I'm just going to go now," Steve said, suddenly unsure as he started to edge toward the door. But then Tony was up, wrapping his arms around him and bringing his mouth down for a long kiss.
"Just think about that while you're on your way back," Tony said with a grin.
Steve had no doubt he would be. Happy drove him to the construction site, arriving just before starting time. Steve jogged quickly to the area where the foreman handed out assignments and found a small group of workers gathered, milling about, talking animatedly.
"Hey," Clint called, "look what the well-heeled chauffeur dragged in. Guess you and Warbucks made up, huh?"
"Knock it off, Clint," Bucky said. He jerked his head at Steve.
"You okay?"
"Yeah, yeah, I'm good."
"Really good, Buck, honest," Steve said, a smile refusing to stay contained.
"Good. And hey, even better news, you're not going to believe it, but the company shut down the site for the day. Gave us all comp days," Bucky informed him.
"All pay, no work," Clint whooped. "I love my life."
Steve stopped short, frowning.
"It's just that SI recently diversified its portfolio, including some investments in construction."
He looked back over his shoulder, noticing the car still parked where he'd left it, Happy leaning against the driver's door. Clint and Bucky followed his gaze.
"Do you guys, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but do you guys think that this," he waved his hand vaguely at the nearly empty construction site, "has something to do with Tony?"
"Why can't I find someone to buy a company and then shut it down to keep me in bed with them all day?" Clint asked plaintively.
"And we've now found the world's most rhetorical question," Bucky replied, clapping Clint on the arm.
Steve started shaking his head.
That was crazy. No one in their right mind would..."
"So if he can't get rid of Bucky, what does he do?"
"Johnson," Steve recalled. "I told him about Johnson one night. You think he did this?"
Steve honestly wasn't sure what to think.
He looked back at Happy, waiting nonchalantly by the car. Bucky and Clint shrugged.
"We're going to grab some beers and head back to the apartment. You in?" Bucky asked.
"No, I guess I'm going back," Steve said, still trying to digest all of this.
"I'll see you guys later, okay?"
He walked part of the way back to Happy, mind whirring.
The apartment.
He turned back to Clint and Bucky, a question forming on his lips.
"Hey," Clint shouted, "give Stark a blowjob and see if you can get us a hot tub."
Steve put his head in his hands and walked the rest of the way to the car, resolutely not looking at Happy, who was snickering into his sleeve. He really hated Clint sometimes.